Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Young Gregory Rosenthal of the Around the NFL podcast and NFL Network joined us a bit ago to talk about, everything. We literally went around the NFL, asked him lots of fun questions. It was a good conversation.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I know. Obviously, the more important part for you guys listening is the part where we asked about the NFC West and about the Seahawks. And as part of this conversation, I promise it's related, even though when I say these names, you're going to roll your eyes. I asked him about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and I was prefacing it by saying, look, what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have been able to do as a pairing, and I know John Schneider is part of that, but the head coach quarterback combo of those two has brought the Seattle Seahawks their most successful stretch of football for a decade. For a decade. No other fan base outside of New England for 10 years in a row saw as much success as Seattle fans did. And I know people listening are saying, well, they didn't win a lot of postseason games after 2015. And you're right. And I know you might be listening saying one Super Bowl isn't enough when you had all this talent. And that's when I want to kind of say, slow your roll. But I also want to give you credit and be like, OK, if that's your opinion, fine. Like, that totally fair, completely fair opinion. Who am I to tell you to be grateful when you had all this talent here? And when you have an example of another team, the Patriots, that did get a lot of Super Bowls out of that pairing. So, there is a world in which this pairing, this coupling of head coach and quarterback in Seattle continues. Like, there's a world in which they figure it out and move forward and continue to evolve as a team and try to get back there. And then there's a world where they don't. And so I was curious to ask Greg, hey, when you look at Brady and Belichick, it is wild that Pete and Russ have been together forever, have had the stretch of success, and it's still only half the amount of time as Brady and Belichick spent together. Like, it really puts it into context what 20 years of success meant there. So what was it that worked for them? Like, how did they last so long? Here's what Greg said.
I think Belichick's way that he was so adaptable allowed him to adapt with Brady. Ultimately, I think Brady's, more important. If you have an all-time great player, that's more important. We've seen what Belichick's done without those types of guys. But having a guy who can kind of change who he is, and I think stay on the cutting edge and stay ahead of the league offensively, defensively, special teams, not just being just a defensive coach and finding a way to win when their defense wasn't that great.
Now, here's one caveat to that. Wilson is not Tom Brady. Carroll is not Belichick. So important context there when comparing these four people and these two teams. But, Jake, one part in particular stood out to you, and I completely understand why it does, which is this idea of adaptability. And if there has been one critique that people have had for the Seahawks, it's that they've kind of stayed. What's worked for them, they've tried to stay true to, and in a really unfortunate twist, what hasn't worked for them and what they've been bad at, you've seen recur year after year. Struggles on third downs, they've been bad at that for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's things like that where it kind of pops up and you're like, man, when you're not adapting, you might try to find success in the same way, and sometimes that might work for you, but you're also going to run into a lot of the same problems.
Yes, and that is something that, as Greg Rosenthal was saying that, I was pointing my finger. I don't know what I was doing in the moment, Stacey. You could tell me better what I was doing. But I felt every word of that because, Stacey, you've also heard me for years, as we've done shows together, say this. Talk about the adaptability factor. And that, to me, is you say that, okay, Russell Wilson's not Tom Brady and Pete Carroll's not Bill Belichick. You're 100% right. They are in different individuals. But there is no reason why that – I'm not saying that they could have won as many Super Bowls or had the same level of success, but I do believe that they could have had better success over the 10 years of their career had that idea of being adaptable been more prevalent within this program. I am all for having the same core fundamental principles of a culture, but in terms of X's and O's, that has to be fluid with the personnel that you have. That doesn't mean you lose identity, but you have to reshape your identity. You have to constantly find what your guys do best and maximize their skill sets instead of trying to fit them into one consistent philosophy and program. And when you're in the NFL and you're coaching a team and you're coaching it for 10 plus years, it's different than in college football. You can recruit to that talent. You can have that turnover cycle, and it's not as important about adapting to personnel as it is making sure that you have a core philosophy and a core crop of principles, and that you're recruiting players that fit that year after year after year. In the NFL, it's harder to do that, to get the exact person that fits exactly what you want to do. And so I think that when you're in that process, that's what Bill Belichick was able to do so well for 20 years, and that's why they were able to win. And Tom Brady, in his career, they had an offense that was different. They had like three or four different versions of their offense during that stretch that kept them ahead of the game and kept them in spots where they didn't get stagnant. And so that, to me, is something that is a deep frustration and something that I don't believe is going to change. I don't believe all of a sudden you're going to become more adaptable and things are going to all of a sudden change by the snap of a finger. I just would be really hard-pressed, and I'd be very surprised to see that happen.
I don't know that I believe this, but to throw the argument out there for the sake of it, because it is a possibility, what if it really is just that Tom Brady is that special quarterback?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, well, he's the greatest of all time.
What I'm saying is adaptability alone, would that be enough for Seattle? Or are there limitations? I think Russell Wilson's a fantastic quarterback. But are there ways in which this relationship would have still been limited compared to New England?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? I mean, what we witnessed with New England is unprecedented, right? I mean, Tom Brady's the only quarterback in NFL history to throw for over 600 passing touchdowns. So you're talking about something that I believe is not really sustainable or something that people should be held to the same standard. But I do think the Seahawks could have been more successful in their run, that this marriage could have been more successful in terms of playoff wins, in terms of getting to a Super Bowl, right? So I do believe that those things can be true. So it's not a direct comparison to New England in terms of expecting the same results, but I do believe that there is a fundamental principle that is there that allowed New England to be as successful as they did. And part of the reason why Seattle, as you look at them right now, 3-7, and after 12 years with Pete and after 10 years here in Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner being here, that you run into a situation where you're getting stale. If you don't hit exactly on the personnel that you need to fit your scheme and your identity, you're going to have major issues.
How about this one from the 425? Adaptability, 425 says, goes both ways. When you have the option to throw underneath and instead you throw the ball downfield into double coverage, there's plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah, I agree. I don't disagree with any of that. So I think that there is all of that. But I would say that as you go through that process, are you on the same page? Because Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, for any differences that they had at the end, they were on the same page in terms of how they were going to mold and change the offense and how they were going to continue to keep evolving. And like I said, four different iterations. So I have not seen that. I have not seen head coach and quarterback be on the same page. And to the texter that texted in, I fully agree. There's nothing that you said that I think is anything that that I disagree with.
No, but I think people are very quick, and I see it a lot because I feel like I get so much of this sometimes. I'm like, where is this coming from? It's like what we talked about. We had Jerry Brewer on a while ago of the Washington Post, formerly the Seattle Times. Fantastic interview, fantastic person. And he basically said that in something like this, it's actually a very difficult conversation in that people always want to point to a hero and villain. Like, I always see either get rid of Russ, he's trash, or fire Pete. Instead of a conversation about, like, can they work together? And if they can't, can they both succeed apart? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's just a way to have the conversation that doesn't always paint someone as the bad guy. And I feel like that's what ends up happening. Like, I think you're making a really fair point about adaptability, and the assumption that that adaptability doesn't apply to everyone on this team, I think, is an incorrect one. But it's, I understand why it's a go-to.
Sure. But I also think that when we have these discussions, we're talking about certain aspects of a conversation. Right. And so when we're talking about that, it is about where is the problems and how do they best move forward. And so that is what we're evaluating over these seven games. And, you know, the quarterback being involved in that, Russell Wilson being involved in that, is included in that discussion. Now, when it comes to adaptability, we're talking about scheme. We're talking about coaching in this particular discussion, and finding the right match and the right marriage between your personnel and what you want to do. And that is what I think Bill Belichick did better than anybody else. So I think it's all very fair points and very understandable in terms of wanting to point at the players and saying, hey, well, they've got a job to do too. Absolutely, 100%. And right now, the players aren't holding their end of the bargain at all, right? I mean, you look at execution errors. I mean, you look at defensively, the third down, and the scheme gets you in a position where Colt McCoy throws it short of the sticks, and your job is to rally and tackle, and you don't rally and tackle? That's on the player, right? Russell Wilson. If there are guys that are open and you don't find them or you look deep instead of, you know, hitting a check down, that's on the quarterback. In pass protection, if you get it completely wrong, that's on the player. But we're talking about the main figureheads of how you fix this issue, and that to me is sometimes it's a hard conversation. It's not an easy conversation to have, and it's about people that I honestly adore and respect. Like I respect the heck out of Pete Carroll and John Schneider and Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and, you know, a lot of guys that I had the opportunity to be close with, and Pete Carroll and John Schneider give me an opportunity to live out my dream. Right? These aren't easy conversations to have. But I think that when you dive down into the issues, that's why, you know, these seven games, that's why I continue to say everything is under evaluation. Everything and everyone, and I'm trying to find what the best solution is for this organization. It doesn't matter who it is. It's what's best for this organization. And that's what this city cares about. That's what it should care about.
All right, let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Jake, you sat down, you put on your fake blue light glasses, you reviewed the film. What stood out when watching the Seahawks offense?
That is 100% true.
Yeah.
I got to admit that yesterday I was very emotional. I was emotional about the
response. Someone asked if you were crying.
Response. No, I just am. I got a gnarly cold over the weekend. No, it's not COVID. I got tested for it, but it left me in a spot where my voice, I'm fine, but my
sure.
voice is shot.
Sure, Dan.
So I'm in a unique spot being in sports radio. I'm playing hurt right now, and I'm willing to do
this
it.
This is your flu game.
That's right. But as I sat down and I watched the film, the All-22 film, and really got to watch it, what stood out to me over everything else was execution errors. I mean, they have a great drive going, and then Alex Collins doesn't know that it's a toss when it's a clear toss play. I'm pretty sure Russell Wilson did call the play wrong in the huddle. You got drop balls. You've got one missed throw to Gerald Everett. But outside of that, I mean, I saw, you know, play designs that were open, that were there. I mean, take for example the first drive of the game. They have, you know, two really positive plays, and then they get into a situation where they take a shot with DK Metcalf. He's running a deeper hinge route, and he's open. Russell Wilson's going to throw it to him, and he gets sacked by Chandler Jones because Chandler Jones just bull rushes Brandon Shell right off the edge. And then you get into third and nine, and then you have no chance. Isaiah Simmons comes free off the edge. You got no chance. So I saw a lot of execution errors, but the one positive that I saw is that I know everybody's emotional when it comes to the offense and the rhythm and all those, but a very positive thing is that Russell Wilson's decision-making in that game was actually way better when I sat down and reviewed the film, the actual film, than what everybody else may think or may feel. And that is positive after going away from a game against Green Bay where it was horrendous. So when you talk about that progress, you go into this next game against Washington, which we'll get more into a breakdown of them and what the Seahawks can do versus the Washington football team. But you're seeing progress to a point where hopefully offensively they can take the next step and Russell Wilson can start to get this team into the end zone on a more consistent basis. But that is what I walked away from, taking the emotion out of it and just simply watching the film. It was better than what I was anticipating, but there is a whole list of execution errors that had me just wanting me to throw my clicker across the room here.
Oh, you and my stepdad have the same vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Get the clicker. Do you call Macy's the Bon Marché? Bon Macy's?
Remote. Is clicker an old person saying?
I guess in my experience, yes, but I completely accept it. And in fact, sometimes I say it
too. To me, it's interchangeable. Remote, clicker, whatever. Whatever you're in the mood
for.
You
know what, Jake? You do you.
I'm just
love
saying.
It. I love it.
The film doesn't lie. And it surprised me because as I watched it, just like everybody else from the TV copy, I felt the same exact way as a lot of people did about just everything in general. And so to me, they have to clean up a lot of the execution errors that are out there. And if they can do that, maybe they can start off this game against the Washington football team on a positive note to kickstart a 7-game run here offensively that looks a lot better. That is the only thing that you can hope for.
Second down. What do the Seahawks need to change in their approach in the final 7 games of the season?
Well, I'm just going to turn to our caller from yesterday. I'm going to turn to Jack here. Cut number 2. There's one word out of everything that he said that stood out to me that I think absolutely has to change.
It's John and Pete. And that philosophy. It's the philosophy all around in every phase of the organization. You can't win till the fourth quarter. Why we got to be so passive? I didn't like it from day one, even when they were winning. Now the numbers have come back. We pulled out so many close games with Russell. Now the numbers have come back to the pack with a realistic number. You're not winning those close games anymore. I mean, and why can't you win a game in the first quarter? If you score 28 points in the first quarter, look at Russell's record for going into the half with the lead. The defense, don't get beat deep. Why not attack?
See what happens when you have a good call?
Yep.
You become a highlight.
You become a highlight, and that's what we do here on this show. So we appreciate you callers. We take it in. I write down notes. Stacy writes down and jots down notes from you guys. We enjoy it. But the one word that Jack talked about, you can agree with anything else. You could disagree with everything else. But passive is the best word that describes what I'm witnessing with this team right now. Passive, trying to hold on, being afraid to lose instead of going for it and trying to win. I mean, it just screams all that. I don't see it. I don't see the same swagger. I don't see the same aggressive mentality. And guess what? When Pete Carroll first rolled up here and showed up to Seattle, he didn't have a passive mentality. Everything was aggressive. Every single thing about him was aggressive. DJ, you brought up a great point as we were talking about this. 2013 NFC Championship. Touchdown pass to Jermaine Kearse. DJ, walk us down memory lane real quick. What down did that come on?
That was on a very long fourth down.
Oh.
Fourth and 12?
Yeah, fourth and, I think it was fourth and 12. I might be wrong.
No.
I think it was fourth and 12.
DJ.
It was like midfield.
No, it had to have been third down. There's no way he would have gone for it on fourth down. There's no way. Pete Carroll's, he's always been passive in those situations. I mean, come on, DJ. What are we talking about? Oh, that's right. Pete Carroll, when he showed up, he actually was aggressive on fourth downs. He went for it. He was trusting. And that is something that has shifted and changed in Pete Carroll's philosophy and over time. And I just think that in these 7 games, you got to be aggressive. You got to be the aggressor. And that's the message that I would be sending to this team.
Third down. Jake, drafting has been my number one issue with the Seahawks. What else about Seattle's drafting has you frustrated?
Well, you talk about drafting. I also look at development. For a long time, we talked about how the Seattle Seahawks have been a developmental program, that Pete Carroll and his staff pride themselves on being a developmental program. Outside of missing on your draft picks and having talent issues, this group has not done a good job in their developmental program. They have not developed guys and helped them get better year after year after year in their program. And that is one thing that I look at, and I've also said that this is a big, major issue. I mean, Marquise Blair has had injury issues, but also his play didn't necessarily progress and get better. Ugo Amadi, who's played a lot of snaps for you, hasn't necessarily progressed and gotten better, has been kind of the same player the entire time. Will Disley, his contributions, fine player, but you have not allowed him, whether schematically, opportunities to develop and get better, right? The list goes on and on. Alton Robinson, last year was a tremendous pass rusher for you. Has he gotten better this year? Has he progressed? I don't think so. Damian Lewis, someone that you thought, hey, could really take the next step for you. Has he progressed and gotten better? I could give you a number of examples. We could go down the list. But the developmental aspect of this program has also struggled and has also faltered. And that has been another thing that has put this team in a position where they're 3-7 right now.
Fourth down. In 30 seconds or less, Jake, can you give me any sort of hope for the Seahawks offense?
Yes, I can. Washington football team, they are 26th in total defense. They're 28th in passing defense. And, oh, by the way, their two best pass rushers, their two best defensive players, Montez Sweat and Chase Young, who are dudes off the edge, they're hurt. They're not playing in this game. So their starting middle linebacker's not playing in this game. They still got good football players, but with that opportunity here come Monday night, offense needs to get going. Perfect opportunity. So that's your glimmer of hope.
Jake, I have two very important questions for you. One you're going to laugh at me about, but I actually think it's the most important one of the bunch. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
I got two questions. I know we just went through questions for four down territory, but I've got two questions, and I'm going to start with the more important one. DJ, you can help me answer this one, too. So maybe this is for both of you guys. I'm going to need some extra voices here. And you know what? For that matter, the text line, 206-421-3776, the Mac and Jack's text line. Here's the question. A friend of mine, Stephen Cohen, he is an editor for The Athletic. He said, is getting flexed out of the NFL in primetime the equivalent of ghosting? I think it's a very important question, a good question. Getting flexed out of Sunday night football is the equivalent of, I don't think of ghosting. I think it's the equivalent of being removed from either a group chat or being asked not to be a groomsman,
right,
or bridesmaid.
Yes.
Being removed from a wedding party because someone's like, you just have so much stuff to do, and I have this other friend that can do a better job, and I don't want to put this on your plate.
Right.
And you're like, but what? That's never happened.
But like,
I just want to make it clear that's never
fully
happened to me. It makes me think.
I'm fully capable of it. The Seahawks, 49ers, we could put on a show. We could put on a good game.
You guys are so busy. You have so much stuff to do. You just go. You get in there in the afternoon. You have so much. You can relax in the evening. You know, we'll take the Broncos and Chiefs. I mean, no one wants to watch them, but don't worry. They'll handle it. You guys just
I do agree that is a better analogy. I don't think ghosting is exactly the right analogy there.
I get it, though.
I do, but I like yours far better, that they are literally being asked not to show up at that time. They are saying, no, you're not good enough.
We insist.
Yes.
That you don't.
We don't insist that you're just not allowed. We are putting our foot down.
How about,
and you're not, this is not happening.
Do you remember when Steve Harvey was the host of the Miss Universe pageant and he crowned the wrong Miss Universe and then literally took the crown off of her head?
Yes.
What about that moment?
Yes.
Like it went to Miss Columbia, but it was supposed to go to Miss Philippines.
Oh, man.
That might be also the equivalent of that. Is like the primetime crown was being put on Seattle's head. Steve Harvey was like, oh, I'm just kidding. I'm so sorry. I read that wrong.
Yeah, but I think that the Steve Harvey situation, crowning Miss America wrong, that's far worse than what's happening to the Seahawks. That is Oh, man. I mean, here's the thing. The 49ers and the Seahawks, they know that at this point that it was probably inevitable. Like, they knew. They were like, oh, is this going to happen? Like, you know, are they gonna let me in? I shouldn't be on the list, but maybe I got a chance, right? And are they going to let this go? And you knew that eventually Sunday Night Football was going to say no. I mean, Al Michaels. How about this? Al Michaels ghosted the Seahawks by not showing up to the Pittsburgh Steelers Sunday night matchup.
Yikes.
He was going to do it again. They can't have that. They can't have
that. That also felt the same. I felt so rejected by Al Michaels in that moment, which hurt because I love Al Michaels.
Right.
The 425 says it's like being demoted to the kids table. And the 719 says it's like back in the MySpace days going from number one to number six.
Oof.
On someone's top.
Both great
lines
analogies.
Lines were drawn in the sand back then.
Oh,
that is very true. And what, if you ever been in a position where you had a friend higher on your friends list than what they had you on?
Oh, that never
happened. That was betrayal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you aren't monitoring.
Absolute betrayal.
Closely,
it was war. It was like, what did I do to you? What's wrong with you? Right? I mean, is there something that I don't know? I mean, I think about that. Yeah, it was personal.
Who did it to you, Jake?
And guess what? When I saw that, I bumped them down even farther than what they had me.
Name him.
No, I will not. But I bumped them down even further.
Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, I think about that now. That was a horrible idea. Why would you do that? Just causes so much division.
Well, maybe you have just a friendship develop with someone else. I mean, maybe the NFL's looking at the Chiefs and the Broncos saying, yeah, suddenly this looks a little more interesting. You got a great offense. Maybe off and on. I mean, Patrick Mahomes keeps throwing picks, but man, once in a while, you're going to have Tyreek Hill bust out for 150 yards.
Yeah, I don't know. That was stressful. I mean, especially when you had a friend or a new friend that jumped over an old friend, right? And you were like, oh, man, I don't want to do this. It's going to be awkward, but I got to move them up. Sorry. Sorry, Jimmy. My bad. I mean, it was an awful time. MySpace, that was cruel.
Jimmy, that's who it is.
Yeah.
That's who it is. My second question here is, if getting back to what we were talking about earlier, how does Pete Carroll coach this team? How do you coach a team that is losing? And I know Giants fans or Jets fans are hearing this thinking, what a dumb question. We have to think that every year. But the Seahawks have not been in this position for a really long time where they are this far behind the eight ball. So how do you coach a team like this? It's tough to use positive reinforcement, but like, what do you do?
I mean, we're going to have to go into the next break with this question because
probably,
MySpace and analogies for the Sunday night a boot for the Seahawks had us in our feelings a little bit. But I think when it comes down to Pete Carroll, this is going to be one of the most incredible challenges that he has had in his entire coaching career. And yes, I put it up there with, you know, the stints that he had with the Patriots and the Jets and getting fired and those stories that he had. But right now, he's in a position that he hasn't been in literal decades. And it's a position that is unfamiliar to him and, quite frankly, has not been a successful position for him. So how does he get out of it? How does he get the best and most out of his players in a situation that he's not accustomed to and that his philosophy or that the way that he runs the program isn't necessarily geared towards, right? So this is a definite unique challenge.
Jake, I asked, you know, being flexed out of primetime is the equivalent of what? A texter, a listener on the Mac and Jack's text line said, like being moved in the MySpace days from number one to number six on the top friends. And you said, look, that happened to me before. It hurts. And I got really mad about it. Someone says, now we know the real story as to why Jake transferred so much. That's what it was.
Okay.
That's what it was. It was
all right.
When people were asking you about it, you wanted to tell the truth and you couldn't. But the truth was, look, I had a friend here that moved me down on his friends list, and I won't put up with that. Not me.
Part of it, sure. Yeah. I mean, deep down, I mean, it was just the 12-year-old who was on MySpace who just had all those feelings creep back up again.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what I need to know is coming your way next. Get your questions in, any question you want. Text it in right now. We're turning it over to you guys. That number is 206-421-3776. Your questions are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
What I need to know is brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in right now. Any question you want. to 206-421-3776. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. We'll start with this one. When it comes to Thanksgiving dishes, what I need to know, mashed potatoes or yams or both?
Oh, both. Why would you pick one or the other?
That's a lot of patat.
Doesn't matter.
We just talked about how great carbs are.
I know.
You go all in on Thanksgiving. You hold nothing back.
I actually don't like, I don't love sweet potatoes as a hearty dish.
Really?
I go regular mash with dinner and then sweet potato pie.
Okay.
They're just very sweet.
It is, but when you do it right, I mean,
yeah,
like
I mean, it's
Brooke, Brooke makes mashed sweet potatoes and then adds a whole bunch of brown sugar and all sorts of good stuff in there, and it is amazing. So I'm going to say yes, absolutely. The problem is that you go into Thanksgiving always, and you have high expectations for yourself and how much you are going to eat, and those expectations don't get met. Like, it's just, that is the one disappointment. You always sit there to yourself, man, this is so good, and I want to keep eating. You just can't. You just can't do it, Stacey.
No, absolutely not.
At some point, it just, you get filled up.
From the 206, what I need to know. On your first big payday, what was your first big flex? Like your first big spending thing?
Oh.
Can I count first big payday as like when I got my first check, like at my first job, my
sure,
first real
check? Yeah.
When I was, my very first job I ever had was a waitress at an Italian restaurant. My first check was like $425 exactly because I was working an obscene amount of hours. And I went immediately to South Center Mall and I spent every penny of it. I have nothing I bought at the time. I'm sure it was like ridiculous, stupid things. But yeah, I had no, there was no part of my mind that was like, put this aside. I was like, no, absolutely not. Burning through this right now.
Right. Gosh, I'm trying to think. There isn't like a hallmark thing where once I did, you know, once I got that check, it was, okay, I'm doing this. We're going to go celebrate. So there's nothing that comes to mind. My all-time favorite story is Joe Flacco, though, when he got his elite quarterback contract and he went to McDonald's. That was the first thing that he went and spent money on. I thought that was pretty great. No, I don't have a story like that. I wish I remembered.
There wasn't
what
ever
we
like
did.
A practice squad check moment where you were like, you know.
No,
what?
I mean there was. I mean certainly there
I'm
was.
Get this TV.
I mean, it wasn't the TV. I mean, I think, you know, Brooke and I, and I think maybe family went out to dinner.
Yeah.
And we're super excited about that, but it wasn't like, oh man, I got this check and now I'm going to go spend my money. I knew, Stacey, in the moment that I was on the roster, you know, it was very flexible each week that I was going to be on the roster. So I was holding on to every single check that we got during that time, just trying to hold on to it, you know, not knowing which Tuesday, right? Every Tuesday of every week is a new week for practice squad guys or guys that are on the bubble.
The anxiety of practice squad guys.
No, it was the worst. It was the absolute worst.
Ugh.
Once you got to about 1 o'clock on, 1 o'clock p.m. Pacific
time. Too late
time.
Now. You owe me that money now.
Exactly.
I'm getting
that check. I am good for another week. Let's go. Life is great.
The 253 says, my first paycheck was 9 cents. I framed it and still have it. Was your first job in like 1850? Why is your paycheck 9 cents?
I have no idea. I still have my first check that I got from the Seahawks. Now that I do have.
From the 360, what's the minimum amount of pies that should be available during Thanksgiving? Two types of pies. Well, hang on a minute.
Two slices or two types?
I was thinking two types. We go pecan pumpkin.
Okay.
But I guess it depends. So we do Thanksgiving with just my parents and my sister, and even then we have two pies.
Okay, I mean, I think that's very, very respectable.
Big
it just depends.
Family.
It depends on how big a gathering you are doing. So I think that is very respectable. Four people, two pies. Yeah, I can get down with that.
Is it bad form, Thanksgiving form, to have only one type of pie?
Yes.
You think so?
Horrible
form.
If
they have only sweet potato, only pumpkin, only pecan.
Correct.
But what if that's okay?
You have to have, I mean, for me, what I'm accustomed to, that there is a whole array of pies. So there is at least four pies that are there to choose from.
that's a lot of pie.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm personally eating the pie, but I've got selection.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. What I need to know, Graveman got $24 million over 3 years, but the talk before his trade was the M's wouldn't be able to afford him. Is $8 million a year for a good reliever really too rich for the M's? If so, folks are going to be disappointed.
No, it's not too rich, but I mean, Kendall Graveman, you have to factor in his age as well, and paying that kind of money based off of one good year in a new role, I mean, that's a lot of money.
And it's not just that, he can't really pitch on back-to-back days consistently. And that's because of the unfortunate circumstance that he has that tumor on his spine, right? He just can't pitch on back-to-back days. So I think the Mariners took that into account too, is that when we hit the stretch run here, he's not going to be available in every day in this three-game series against the A's, for example.
Yeah, think about how much they used Paul Sewald in the second half of the season. You would not have been able to do that with Kendall Graveman. Not even close. So I do think that is a huge reason. And Kendall Graveman, if you have the bullpen where you feel like he can be that specialist and have that role, and you got the money to spend it, like, great. I don't knock it. But to bank on that guy being, you know, a Paul Sewald, Drew Steckenrider type of role where they're going in there almost nearly every day, I don't think that money is... I don't think that's a good risk.
From the 206, what would you be willing to do for the Hawks to win out? Skydive? Base jump? Would you skydive for the Hawks to win out? 10-7. You can still... there's probably going to be a wild card team that's 10-7. Maybe even...
Probably. I mean, if it meant that the overall structure stays together and everything goes well after the season, then yeah, I would be willing to skydive.
No, that's not... No. Young Jacob, it's just... If the Seahawks are 10-7 to end the season, you don't know what's going to happen next year. I'm not promising anything else other than, you know, like when the genie is like, I'm going to tell you this, but there's like another half you feel like you're missing. All I'm telling you is the Seahawks will be 10-7. Would you skydive for that?
Yeah, I'm a father of three kids.
You would skydive? It's so safe.
People do this. Good.
Grandmas do this. Grandpas do this.
What's my payoff for
the
them
Seahawks
to be 10-7?
10-7.
Nah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, some fan you are. I'm just kidding.
Sorry. That isn't enticing enough for me. I am deathly afraid of heights.
Would you eat a spider?
No.
Would you, I don't even know, jump in the lake? Would you jump in Lake Union?
Sure.
10-7? We're talking about a playoff run,
That's no
maybe?
Big deal. Yeah.
I mean, Lefko, would you skydive? Thumbs up. Lefko would skydive for nothing. Lefko, would you skydive if the Seahawks didn't win another game? Thumbs up from Lefko.
There we go.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. All right, you guys.
Cannot wait for Thanksgiving.
Right. That'll do it for us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow. As a reminder, because of Thanksgiving, The Huddle will also be on tomorrow. Dave Wyman joining us for that. Lots of awesome Seahawks guests. It'll be a really good one. 2-hour preview of the Seahawks Monday night game. Reminding myself of Monday night game. All right, don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.